WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. When we think about migration here in Chicago, we likely think of people coming from South America. But that picture looks different globally and is quite visible in Canada. People head there from Europe, the Caribbean, several African countries, and the Middle East, to name a few. Our northern neighbor is a country known for progressive policies on healthcare, education, and also immigration. So Chicago Sun-Times reporter Elvia Malagon traveled to Toronto, a city of immigrants, to learn how Canada is welcoming refugees and asylum seekers. She also saw up close how these policies hold up under the pressures of a tight housing market and soaring costs. This reporting trip is part of the Democracy Solutions Project. It's a collaboration between WBEZ, the Chicago Sun-Times, and the University of Chicago's Center for Effective Government, with funding support from the Pulitzer Center. I sat down with Elvia to hear what she learned. I started off by asking her why she decided to report on immigrants in Toronto. Here's Elvia.
One of the things, immigration has always been a controversial and political issue in the U.S., and we always were seeing headlines about how Canada was actually welcoming immigrants. They wanted immigrants to migrate there. So we wanted to explore what that actually means for immigrants who end up in Canada. What were they experiencing, and how are their experiences differing from that in the U.S.?
So how does the country's treatment of refugees and asylum seekers look different than what's happening here?
As a journalist, one of the things that I noticed right away was the language that is used around immigration. So, for example, you'll often hear people in Canada use the word mosaic, that it's a mosaic of different cultures and nationalities. Mm-hmm. A lot of people that I spoke to were very explicit that they don't like the word asylum seekers. They like to use the words refugee claimants to refer to this specific population. And as I was talking to academics who were explaining to me the political differences in Canada and the U.S., a lot of them said that most of the political parties in Canada do support a robust immigration system. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is because a lot of immigrants in Canada end up living in parts of the country where there is strong political representation. So they end up becoming Canadian citizens and in turn become voters.
Yes, that is true. The voter turnout among the immigrant population there is quite high. Where are the bulk of migrants in Canada coming from, Elvia?
A lot of the refugee claimant population that I met with, a lot of them weren't coming from Venezuela. A lot of them were coming from various African nations. We talked to a lot of people that were coming from Kenya, Uganda, Nigeria. Those were a lot of the populations that we were seeing, some from the Caribbean, but primarily a lot of folks coming from various African nations.
Why? What can you tell us about why they were choosing Canada?
What we often heard was that a lot of people, their migration pattern varies and it's different. A lot of folks are finding visitor visas or things like that, and they're flying into Canada. So they fly into Toronto's major airport, which is called Pearson. Mm-hmm. And once they're there, either at the airport or after they leave the airport, they're basically saying that they want to claim asylum, or that they have an asylum case that they want to proceed with. So the migration is a little bit definitely different than what we're seeing here. And for a lot of people, they did say that, you know, they had heard that Canada was friendlier, or for them, it was just the process was more straightforward and less complicated than the U.S. process.
Yeah. And how many refugee claimants are in the city?
Yeah, so within the official city shelter system, there were about 4,300 refugee claimants as of mid-April. But there were additionally almost close to 2,000 other refugees who are in other spaces. The federal government is providing some hotel rooms for them, basically until the shelter space opens up.
On several issues, Canada is often held up as the more progressive country, not just when it comes to immigration. And I do have a personal lens into this, right? I lived in Toronto for decades. I later migrated to the U.S., so I know what immigration's like to both countries, really. But what do you think, Elvie? I mean, you spent some time there, saw it up close recently. Would you say that Canada is more progressive when it comes to its immigration policies?
I do definitely think so. Just because, for example, the refugee claimants, one of the things that as I was talking to them, a lot of them are getting work permits right away. A lot of them do have access to some social service benefits there in Canada. Do I think it's a perfect model? No, because like everyone else, Canada is dealing with a housing crisis, inflation, and there have been some efforts by the government there to try to limit some forms of immigration. So, for example, there's been a lot of changes with the international student visas, temporary workers. So there has been some restrictions.
Trying to keep it under control?
Yes, I think so. And especially as so many people there are dealing with the housing crisis, just like here with rising rents. And it definitely seems like that's one of the reasons why they're doing that.
Yeah. One of the reasons so many people do go to Canada, too, is because the country's long had this, quote, express entry system. This is for so-called skilled workers. Is the program still in effect, Elvia?
Yes. And one of the stories that I worked on talked to this population, which differs from the refugee claimant population. A lot of these folks are coming to Canada because they have PhDs, they have master's degrees, they're at the executive level. And a lot of them have various reasons for why they want to migrate to Canada. For example, I talked to a couple that actually was from the Milwaukee area. One of them, Eddie, he had DACA, but he basically was shut out of getting permanent residency in the U.S. He was never able to. They tried various methods, but basically everything was denied, everything was blocked. And this was during the Trump administration, so they felt like their prospects of actually having him become a permanent resident were very low. And so what they did is they made a profile through Express Entry, and they were able to migrate to Toronto in 2018 through the Federal Skilled Workers Program. And now they're Canadian citizens. Yeah. And Eddie was able to vote for the first time in Toronto.
Yeah, it only takes 3 years. So that checks out for sure. Here in Chicago, we've been struggling, though, with how best to provide housing for asylum seekers. Toronto has been facing a similar issue, Elvia. Can you explain?
Yeah, so last summer, there were images and a lot of news reports of refugee claimants who were sleeping on the street of downtown Toronto streets, basically because their shelters are also at capacity. And one of the things that I noticed was that started to emerge that differed from here is that there was an existing network of nonprofits that for a long time had already noticed that within the Canadian immigration system, refugee claimants were falling through the cracks. So what they started to do, and this was decades ago, was they started to create these houses that are kind of like immediate shelters, but they're also providing all these other services. Like, for example, one of them does like a mock court hearing of like what you should expect to do, like when you have an immigration case. Help you find a job. They help you connect you to churches so you could start to build a community.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
Thinking of that solution, I mean, how would you say it compares to some of the solutions that we've seen crop up in Chicago?
It does seem like there are some efforts to try to create a similar model. But I do think one of the things that differed very is, as I was talking to a lot of the nonprofits, you know, here in Chicago, we were hearing this 60-day policy that was being implemented. And a lot of the nonprofits did not think that was a good idea. In Toronto, they said that some of those folks are staying in the shelters for like a year because that's how long it's taking them to get a job, you know, build up a little bit of savings so that they could find an apartment and also find folks to live with. A lot of the people that I spoke to, they weren't living by themselves, but how they were able to get an apartment was they found a couple people and who became essentially their roommates, and that's who they were living with to split the bills.
Well, you mentioned, you know, being in the shelter for up to a year, and I'm thinking of a very stark contrast here to Chicago, which now has this 60-day limit on shelter stays. But there is no such limit in Toronto. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, there's not a specific limit for how long someone can stay. And some of the advocates that we spoke to said that that's what they're advocating for, that there isn't a specific stay just because it could confuse the process, especially when you have to have a specific address to get legal notices or legal mail about your immigration case, or when like you're expecting your work permit, or also when you're applying for a job and you need an address to put down when you're applying for a job application. So they just said that, and also one of the things is because of the housing crisis that they're going through, it's just become harder to actually find apartments that are affordable.
Do you have a sense, Elvia, as to the amount of money that Canada spends on these services compared to what's being spent here in Chicago?
Well, the one thing is that a lot of these services, the nonprofits, some of them are funded through philanthropy. So some of them do, like, for example, one of the organizations that I spoke to was Homes First. And the city essentially did rent out this motel that was converted into a shelter. So, you know, anyone, you can't walk in and like try to get a room at that specific hotel. It's just for refugee claimants.
Okay.
So the city is providing some funding there. But for some of these other organizations, they're funded through private donations and through philanthropy.
So you've had some time then to sort of think about and reflect on your trip to Canada. Is my home country a model that the U.S. should try to follow?
Well, I definitely think there are some things that the U.S. can learn from Canada. For one, especially for the federal skilled workers. And one of the things that they mentioned to me was that the Canada process immigration system was just so much more modern and easier to navigate with shorter wait times than what they experienced in the U.S. I think there are probably some lessons that can be learned in regards to how the provinces in Canada can sponsor immigrants, and also there's more buy-in from some employers to also sponsor immigrants. And lastly, I think this network of nonprofits that has really filled in the gaps in Toronto and really helped when they were seeing an uptick in asylum seekers, I think that's something that could be looked at as well. And one of the, to me, one of the things that stood out was that We are seeing this increase in migration across the world. Here in Chicago, we were seeing, you know, we're seeing the population of Venezuelans and South Americans and Central Americans that are coming to Chicago. And in Toronto, it was a different population. It was folks coming from Kenya fleeing persecution because of their sexuality or because of their politics. But one nonprofit person I spoke to put it very bluntly and said, this isn't going to end. Like, there isn't going to be an end to this at the end of the year. And in fact, she was predicting that there could be even more global migration as we start to see more effects from climate change across the world.
We've been speaking with Sun Times reporter Elvia Malagon about her immigration reporting trip to Toronto, Canada. Thank you so much for checking in with us.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Patrick Smith and Linnea Dominic. It was edited by Meha Ahmed and mixed by Micah Yasin. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. For more Reset segments and stories under the Democracy Solutions Project, head to our website at wbez.org. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again this afternoon.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBEZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely.